1017 FM, 710 Keel, Micah McCarty, Aaron back. Grateful to have you back. Thank you so much for being here.
You bet.
Because we get guests like this when you're back. It's okay. I'm not offended. Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, joining us on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Mike, good morning.
Hey, brother. Good to hear your voice. And welcome back, Aaron.
Thank you.
And yes, I joined just because she's back, Mike. You know that.
I know
he
that.
He would have done that with you. You
That's
know
what your
that.
People told me. Is Aaron there? No, oh. We're not going to do it then.
So, government going to be back open tomorrow? How close are we?
Let's pray. Let's pray that there's a break. This is day 30 of the Democrat shutdown, and they've now voted 14 times to keep the government closed. And it's just beyond me why this is happening. There's no coincidence. The polling says now that 70% of Americans view the Democratic Party is out of touch. They're just not paying attention to the real pain, the real hardship that's being caused by this. And I'm doing a press conference every morning, y'all seen. I'm just going out and telling the American people the simple truth. This is about one thing and one thing alone. They are trying to use this as leverage to get credibility with the far left in their party, because Marxism is on the rise, as you've seen, in the Democrat Party. They're about to elect an actual Marxist, a far left socialist candidate, Mamdani, as the mayor of America's largest city in New York. And they're worried about that. The leaders here are worried they're going to get a challenge from a Marxist. And so they're just trying to show a fight, and they're causing great pain because of it.
Well, and I would take it a step further. It's not that they're out of touch. It's that they don't care. They've said the quiet part out loud. Well, we know people are suffering and hurting, but this is our leverage. In other words, this is about us and our power. We don't care about the people.
That is literally the quote of the second highest ranked Democrat in the House, Catherine Clark, who's their whip. And she said that the other day. And then Chuck Schumer said a few days before that, he leads over in the Senate, that every day of this gets better for us. What are you talking about, Chuck? Us who? It's the Democrats who are elected here. Hakeem Jeffries is on the ballot next fall. He's the Democrat leader in the House, my counterpart over here. And he's afraid that he's going to get a challenge from a Mamdani disciple on the New York City Council. This is a young guy who's already claiming he's going to run against him. So both of those guys, Schumer, Hakeem, all their leadership teams, they're terrified of losing their political positions. And so they're playing to the far left, and it's causing real pain across the country.
Mike, let me ask you this. I'm a little bit concerned why you have not called the House back in session. Oh, you've got federal workers who are working and they're doing their job and not getting paid. You could still be accomplishing things on the House side, even though the government is shut down, and you've been criticized for this. Why have you made that decision?
Well, we have been working. All of our members, most all of them, are back in their districts trying to help their constituents navigate this crisis, because you have so many federal employees and people who depend upon government contracts and, you know, people who rely upon nutrition assistance and veterans health services, all those things, they're all brought to a halt. So the members are back trying to help all those constituencies handle that work. They're working harder now than they would be if they were here in the Capitol on the House floor. The only thing that's stalled right now is legislative business on the floor. Everything else goes on in earnest. I mean, I've been working 21-hour days for the last month, just trying to manage all this crisis. But the reason we're not doing legislative business, the reason we're not here on the floor, is because the most critical and most essential, most important job of Congress is to keep the government operating. And when the Democrats are playing games, the only leverage I have to get the government working again is to put pressure on the Senate Democrats to do their job. And if I bring everybody back here, it just stirs that up, and it prevents that from happening. I think something's going to break soon. Look, SNAP benefits, y'all, are going to run out at the end of this month. I mean, we've got 42 million families, 42 million people in this country who rely upon that. Now, I'm grateful that Governor Landry and Louisiana legislature, they worked hard. They're going to make sure that SNAP benefits are paid for Louisianians. So we're covered. We're one of only two or three states where the governor stepped in to help. And you're going to have real pain felt by people around the country. And you've got the WIC benefits, the Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program. The President Trump has bent over backwards to find extra pots of money to fund that. But it's not an inexhaustible fund, so that's going to run out as well. We've managed to get the troops paid through October because President Trump found unobligated funds in the Department of Defense to do that. But that money's running out as well. So the longer this thing drags on, air traffic controllers, if you have a flight coming up, there's a very good and increasing chance that you'll have a delay or maybe a cancellation, because if you don't have people in the towers, they can't run the flights safely, and they won't run them if they can't do that. So it's very real. It's going to affect every aspect of society. And that pain dial is going to be turned up quickly. And it's all because, remember, this is about one thing. It's about Democrats playing politics. And I wish that were not true, but that is the simple truth that they cannot refute.
Mm-hmm. That leads me to my next question, Mike, Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. Look, we know we've always considered ourselves the silent majority as conservatives. Called this the flyover states. We know the majority of Americans. I mean, Trump won the Electoral College. He won the popular vote. He won every swing state. We know the majority of people support what you and the Republican, the conservatives are doing. My question is, how did we get to a point where we're about to elect a communist as mayor of the largest city in this country? How do people like Ilhan Omar get elected? How did the Democrat Party go so far left? How did we get here? What happened?
Brother, you and I are going to need 90 minutes to go through that on the radio. I have a slideshow that explains how this began and the early 60s and devolved into the point where it is today. But gradually we moved away from the founding principles of the country. And the reason we're conservatives is we are trying to conserve what made us the greatest nation in the history of the world. The ideas of individual freedom and limited government and the rule of law and peace through strength and fiscal responsibility and free markets and human dignity, all these things that are the hallmarks of what it means to be an American. We celebrate the 250th anniversary of next year. They're imperiled by people who have this other ideology, this far left Marxist ideology that is based upon a very different foundational ideas. And look at the split screen right now. You've seen that theme in my morning press conference. Right now, the two parties have a wider chasm between them that was ever imaginable.
Right.
I mean, it's way different than when we were kids, you know?
Mike, the something has been posted, and the attention on Snap Now, I think, is very valuable. And this has been posted online this week. When you give the government the power to feed you, you also give them the power to starve you. That's why socialism never works. We need to examine SNAP. 53,000 in Louisiana are not going to get their SNAP benefits. The governor's not giving it back to all. Those are able-bodied people that he says should be working.
With no dependents.
Right. We need to pay attention to that. There are some people that really we don't need to be giving them these benefits.
Well, you're exactly right. And we just demonstrated that in the One Big Beautiful Bill, our big signature legislation we got signed into law July 4th. We looked at the Medicaid program, right? And you had that same problem in Medicaid. It was full of fraud, waste, and abuse. Billions of dollars a year wasted and given to able-bodied young men without dependents, for example. They were riding the wagon instead of working. And so we went in and rooted that out, and we saved the program that way because it's intended for the elderly, disabled, and, you know, young women without a spouse and young children. I mean, people who desperately need it. And the money was being siphoned off by people who were riding it. By the way, you also had almost 2 million illegal aliens on the program. Mm-hmm. And we got them off as well. It's for U.S. citizens. So we have to do the same thing in each of these government programs. And watch what happens there. And every time we do that, the right, just, moral thing to preserve the programs and make them stronger for the people who need them, the Democrats cry foul. I mean, literally, their demand to reopen the government is that we give those benefits back to illegal aliens. Look at it. They look at page 57, section 2141 of the bill they filed to reopen the government. They're demanding that we spend $200 billion and give that back to illegal aliens. It is unconscionable.
It's absurd. Mike, let me change gears for just a moment. There's a billboard that's been put up here locally calling on you to release the Epstein files. And you said you have a
break.
Exactly.
Another red herring. A total. They're trying to distort everything. Of course, the Epstein files are being released. The people who buy these billboards and try to stir up trouble are not paying attention to the facts. Last Friday, we had the third batch of release of the Epstein estate files. Okay, we have lawyers during the shutdown who have been up in New York City digging through all of that stuff. They have released his flight logs, his financial ledgers, his daily calendar, his personal notes. I mean, we're going so deep into the details of Epstein, there will be nothing uncovered. And that's all been happening. The House Oversight Committee is filled with some of the biggest bulldogs in Congress, on the right and the left, the Democrats and Republicans, all united in this. It goes on around the clock. They are releasing. We got 43,000 pages of Epstein file documents out already. There's more to come. There's subpoenas outstanding right now. 11 deposition subpoenas. They've gone after the suspicious activity reports of the bank records, the Treasury Department. I mean, it is a full and open display of all of it, and everybody can draw their own conclusions. The one thing we've been insistent about, and the reason there was a fight initially, is that I know and I believe and I insist that we have to protect the innocent victims. By some estimates, there's as many as 1,000 young women who were just suffered unspeakable crimes in the trafficking ring that was involved at Epstein Island.
Well, and not only young women, children.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Many of them were minors. That's exactly right. And they suffered great harm. And you can't have their identities uncovered in these files because it'll cause further harm.
Right.
So we have to absolutely insist upon that. And I have. And that's why they've gotten all upset.
From a constituent of yours in Benton, I get this question. My dad receives the aid and attendance benefit for veterans. Will he still receive that?
Oh, we hope so. The Department of Defense has bent over backwards to find these unobligated funds to keep taking care of our veterans and making sure troops are paid. We've got to look into the fine point and the details on each of those programs. But the point is, the money's running out, and that's why we're so upset. I mean, I'm not the happy warrior right now. They're calling me Mad Mike at the press conferences, but I am angry about it because the simplest way to do this, the best way to get all those benefits returned and restored, the programs, is for the Democrat shutdown to end. And we just need 5 or 6 more Democrats in the Senate, the centrist Democrats, to just come to their senses, defy their own leadership that's never going to bend on this, because, again, they think they're going to lose their jobs, and do the right thing. And then we can go and hash out all these remaining policy disputes and things we've got for the end of the year. That was always going to be the plan, but they decided to pick this fight so they can look tough to the Marxist base, to the No Kings Rally people and all those folks. They're terrified, and they care more about their own political jobs, you guys, than they care about our veterans and people who depend on these services. Mm-hmm.
Again, they don't care about themselves. It's all about their leverage and their power.
Yeah.
Yep. Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, we know you're on a tight schedule. Thank you so much. The only thing I request, I want a Trump 2028 hat. And if you'll get,
he hands them out like candy. I think I can get you one.
Get him to sign it for me if you don't mind.
Okay. I think that he's totally trolling the Democrats.
I know it. I love it.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Mike, thank you so much.
Thanks. All right. Good to hear you.
Speaker of the House, you too, sir. Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, Mike and McCarty. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, I didn't realize Mayor Tom's hospital stay was extended.
You bet. Going to stay in the hospital through the weekend. Because he's on an IV antibiotic,
okay.
The doctors have said they want to keep him in the hospital so he can finish that antibiotic treatment for the pneumonia. And so he'll stay through the weekend, go home on Monday, and then plans to be back at City Hall on Tuesday. So
he's going to join us in about 10 minutes.
Yep. We're going to interrupt his lovely hospital meal.
From his hospital. I love it.
Well, compare hospital food, maybe.
Yeah, you guys will have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, exactly. The breakfasts were the best. I'll be honest. The breakfasts were the best.
Okay.
Because they know how to cook bacon. Mystery meat? I don't know about that.
Well, Mayor Tom Arsenault, live, not in the studio.
Nope.
We'll forgive him this time.
Yeah.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault gives us an update from his hospital room. Coming up just after the break, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710. Oh, I'm sorry. 710 Keel. Wasn't ready for that, Ruben. Love it. Do, do, do,
do, do. Scary
news. Now, on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline.
Shreveport Mayor. He may have hung up now, though.
Maybe so, yeah.
Tom Arsenault. Mayor, good morning.
I'm still here.
Good.
Well, how you feeling?
How are we?
I feel great. The wonders of modern chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Tell us how it came on. I heard you coughing at the council meeting, but somebody had told me you had been feeling sick a little bit prior to that. How did this all come on?
Oh, I've been coughing for, I would say a couple of weeks. And this is the time of year that I normally will get some sinus drippage. And so I really just attributed it to that. But it did kept getting worse. And then last weekend, I had a real bout of chills and fever, and as well as the cough, and it seemed to get better. I took a flu shot, and I thought perhaps it was a reaction to that. So I had a lot of different things that in my non-medical, rational mind made sense. But starting Monday afternoon and then Tuesday morning, I really was coughing badly and feeling badly, but there were a couple of things on the council agenda that I wanted to see through, and so I really wanted to make it through the council meeting Tuesday. So I did go to the doctor early Tuesday morning, but my symptoms were not all that bad at that time, and starting about noon, they really, really accelerated.
Okay.
And I wasn't feeling well at all, but I hung around through the kindness of the city council. They moved those items up on the agenda so that I could excuse myself. And the firemen said, we really ought to check you out while we're here. So they did. And they were recommending that I go to the hospital. So
that was my next question, because when you stepped out of the council chambers, there were already firemen out in the lobby. Is that right?
They were, yes. They really watch me carefully, and they take good care of me. Of course, we had the chief and one of the assistant chiefs, and they called in the deputy chief, and then they brought in the other folks. They just wanted to make sure that there wasn't something more serious going on. Of course, as it turns out, there was.
Mm-hmm. So, now, somebody had told me, and obviously now I'm learning it was wrong, that you, quote, fell out. There was no fall. No, there was no collapse or anything like that, correct?
No. I walked out when I just was weak. And when I stood up, I realized how weak I was. My vital signs were not good. I had a little temperature, and my blood pressure was elevated. My white cell count was elevated. And so they said, we think there's something else going on. And we think we ought to transport you to the hospital. And I was resistant to that because I'm very stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
And they got on the line with my primary care physician. And she said, you need to take him to the hospital.
So you get in the ambulance and they take you.
I said, this sounds like I ought to be taken to the hospital. So that's what they did. When I got to the hospital, I was running a very high temperature, very high white cell count. And then they did some x-ray. I had x-rays done Tuesday morning, so I knew I had pneumonia. But at that point, we didn't feel like I needed to go home right away. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that I didn't do that, because I wouldn't be here getting the care that I am getting.
Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault. Tom, I just went completely blank.
They tested you for COVID. It was not COVID, correct?
No COVID, no flu, no sinusitis. It's a bacterial infection that anybody can get. And obviously, if you start coughing up mucus and it lasts for more than a day or two, you should go get checked out. And I did not do that, and I'm paying a price for it.
Well, and now what I wanted to emphasize, you're not under sedation, and you are not out of control. You are still not you're not incapacitated. You're still acting as mayor.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've signed a bunch of contracts yesterday. I really reached the stage where I feel great, And I'm not really short of breath. My oxygen level has returned to 100%. I have no fever. But basically, they're so pleased with the way I'm responding to the intravenous antibiotics that they don't want to stop that pattern. And those I can only get here at the hospital. So they're going to keep me for a few more days just to make sure we kill all those little bacteria that are sitting at the bottom of my lungs dead.
Yeah, because kickback comes back twice as hard.
Everybody you were around on Tuesday, is this bacterial pneumonia contagious?
No.
Okay. So nobody, you didn't spread it?
I didn't spread it, no.
Are you on oxygen? Are they periodically giving you oxygen still or no?
No, not anymore. And my oxygen level, I'm looking at my chart, my little electronic chart. My oxygen level right now is, not showing, but earlier this morning it was 100%, which most of us don't get. And they cut me off of additional oxygen Tuesday night.
Okay. Are you getting
up? I haven't had any extra oxygen. I'm taking breathing treatments and the normal things they do for pneumonia.
Are you planning to be back at the office on Tuesday? Is that what I saw in the news release?
That's the plan, yeah, because the regimen of the IV antibiotics will end on Monday. It's a seven-day regimen, so it'll end on Monday. And one of the other advantages of this is by the time that I get back to the office, I should be able to be on a full schedule.
Oh, wow. Okay. Do you need anything? Are there things that people, I mean, you want me to drop by and tell you jokes or something?
No, actually, I have a really good political novel that I'm reading.
Oh, good.
And I've got...
you need
I've
some Southern-made donuts?
Actually, the food here is good, so I'm doing very well. Lots of people have called and emailed and texted and left encouraging words and let me know they were praying for me, and that's all very important. It really helps my recovery and helps my spirits.
Erin said her favorite part when she was out was the breakfast.
Breakfast is good there, yeah.
Yes, breakfast is good.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have the grits?
Dinner is particularly good.
Oh, nice.
Well, that's debatable. But
yeah, well, you know, thanks. Elizabeth was coming and going yesterday, and she kind of popped in during the lunch hour, had a hard time finding a parking place because of the cafeteria.
Oh.
Apparently, it's a popular place to have lunch.
Yeah, that's not bad. Well, it came on fast for you, I know, and you it sets you back when medical stuff happens, but it sounds like you're doing great.
I am doing super, and the longer I talk, the more my voice cracks a little bit, but... I am just doing very well in my recovery. The staff here is fabulous, and you know, I've had a few visitors, but really trying to limit that so I will rest.
Gotcha.
Absolutely. Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault, look, take care, get better, enjoy the weekend. I don't mean enjoy, but enjoy your time and recover.
A lot of good football on Saturday.
There you go.
You bet.
LSU is not going to lose Saturday.
Yeah, we're not.
That's exactly right.
Thank you, Mayor. Take care.
Thank y'all.
Mm-hmm. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Coming up after the news, top of the hour, Shreveport Police Captain Janice Daly going to join us, talking about their plans to kind of solidify the Red River District. That's up after the news, top of the hour. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
You don't get trick-or-treaters where you live,
no,
do you?
No,
not really.
I don't. No.
Yeah.
They come into your house? They come into your house, aren't they?
They do sometimes. Some years are more than others. Sometimes it's really kind of quiet.
Do you hand out the junky candy or good candy? Junkie, the pause says junkie.
Well, I don't hand out anything, but sometimes Santa Claus hands out candy canes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
But
Santa going to be?
Santa won't be there this year.
Why not?
Because
Santa's got a commitment?
Yeah, he's busy.
He's at the North Pole fixing toys?
Right.
Oh.
So our porch light will be off.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we've got plans. We got plans tonight, so.
That's sad.
I know, but.
I saw that chocolate prices were up like 17%, and so more people are handing out, you know, the Twizzlers the right. And
the candy corn,
Starbursts, and Skittles, and those little bags instead of chocolate, because chocolate prices have skyrocketed.
Yeah,
but we have a coworker.
I wonder if he's doing full size again.
He sent me a picture of the candy he's handing out. I want to give his address out, but then he would kill me.
Right.
And plus, I go by his house about 8 times. I put on a different hat and different shirt because he gives out full size.
He doesn't know it's you at all.
No, he has no clue. Right, but yeah, full size candy bars. This crazy. I don't know how he does it. I'm sure the whole neighborhood knows, and they're like, "Here's the house. Here's where you need to go." But he and his wife, they put out all kind of decorations. They love Halloween. It's their deal, you know, and it's so cool.
We've got a neighbor that has their yard full. I mean, full. You can't just walk from the street up to the front door. They have it roped off. You have to go through the maze. And talking, Aaron, 15-foot werewolves. And these aren't inflatables. These are, it moves and the eyes light up and it goes. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
That really is cool. That is cool. It's going to be a good night. I'm hoping all the kiddos have a blast. You know the one on Piermont and Fern that decorate? They seem to add stuff every year to that yard.
Hang from the trees and all that.
There's
all
kinds of stuff out.
And they do St. Patrick's Day and Easter. And they do not just Christmas and Halloween.
At Christmas, though, I love when they do it at Christmas, and then the neighbor right across Fern puts out a sign that's pointing to their house, and it says ditto.
Yes.
I thought that was brilliant.
Love them.
That's so good. So good. But yeah, Halloween's a big deal. It's a big, big to-do.
It's bigger every year.
Yes. Lots of, and then all the Christmas stuff. Thanksgiving is just, they just get so forgotten. It gets so forgotten. Because we'll move from Halloween, Christmas. It's time for Christmas.
Right.
Which is crazy to me.
By the way, Home Depot already running Christmas commercials.
Yes.
For a week or two now.
Mm-hmm.
During football games, I'm like, are you kidding me?
I saw Hobby Lobby had all these Christmas stuff 50% off. Because I don't think Hobby Lobby does Thanksgiving. I think they're one of those stores that doesn't believe in the Thanksgiving stuff because of the...
I don't know.
I'm not... Somebody text us and message us on the message board.
I would be surprised if that were the case.
Okay, message us and let us know because they're pushing Christmas right now big time.
Right.
And we'll see. I saw one church said they weren't going to do trunk or treat because of the potential evil that Halloween is out there. So one church in the area, I think it was in Keithville, said they weren't going to do trunk or treat this year. They canceled. So
we already had ours at our
did you?
Church.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of them had them this week.
Beautiful weather. Had a hayride and all kinds
very
of fun games
cool.
And jumpy things.
Oh, nice.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
Captain Halloween's Janice fun. Daly from the Shreveport Police Department joining us in about 10 minutes talking about their plans to increase safety in the Red River District.
Mm-hmm.
We'll hear from that. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel, and on the free Kiel app. FM, 710 Kiel, Mike and McCarty in studio, Shreveport Police Captain Janice Daly joining us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming out.
Absolutely.
We know that there's efforts being made down at the Red River District. People are concerned. Of course, right now there's not a lot of businesses down there.
Mm-mm.
City trying to work on that. But also one of the concerns is safety.
Yes.
And you guys have some plans? Are we increasing in security in that area or just patrol or what
well,
are we
we're
what
looking
are we
at
doing?
Several different options. You know, we're looking at do we need to increase our camera coverage? Do we have the ability to increase our manpower down there especially on nights when there are events? Do we want to make it a specific entry points instead of wide open? Things like that. And that would allow us to better control what, not necessarily who, but what type of objects come in and out of the district.
Under the ordinance now, when they pass that open container ordinance for that district, people can wander around through the Red River District with alcohol, correct?
Correct.
I can bring my own down there. I can pour my drinks and I can wander through that district and drink all I want.
Correct. There's open container. Open container is allowed.
Was that a mistake?
That decision was made years ago. I think probably when it was made in the spirit of doing good things for the city. Now, I don't really have an opinion on whether or not it needs to be revisited.
But you do have an opinion that alcohol can escalate people doing stupid things.
Well, sure. Anytime you add any type of mind-altering substance, it has the propensity to, or the potential, I shouldn't say the propensity, the potential to, you know, cause you to lose, not use good judgment.
Okay.
But there are other districts that do have open container. All across the country.
Beale Street, French Quarter, lots of them, yeah.
So it's not an unusual situation to have.
There was a mention during the council meeting of a possible cover charge and or metal detectors to go in and out. That would mean you'd have to put in the specific entry points and all that. Is that something that will be on your report to at least investigate or to look at?
So the cover charge is not something that the police department, we would, you know, we don't decide that. We would.
But the money, they said, would go to you. I mean, if you do charge a cover charge, then the money would be used to beef up security. That's what I'm hearing.
Kevin was very surprised at that.
I had not heard that one.
Okay.
You know, we will take any money that, you know, that someone wants to give us. And we're not opposed to a cover charge. The specific entry points is something that would very much impact us. Okay. Because even if we use private security to man those, you have to have an officer there in the event the metal detector or whatever it is you're using goes beep, beep, beep. You have to have somebody with enforcement authority there to address that issue.
Well, I'm thinking of the Red River District, and even starting up on Texas Street by Chelsea's. How old am I? Blind Tiger, going down across Commerce Street and then into toward the casinos. How would you enclose that and make single entry points? How would you control that? Would there be fencing installed?
Fencing would be one option. I mean, if you look back at what occurred last year during Humor and Harmony, that was a very loose version of what could occur, a temporary version, I should say, versus loose version. That's something like that. Fencing, and then, again, you designate your specific entry points. You have your emergency egress points in case something happens.
Mm-hmm. There were some mentioned by Chief Smith, I believe, that some of the cameras down there are very old. They were donated by the casinos long ago, and they may not be operable anymore. You may not have access to those feeds anymore. Are y'all working on getting that solved?
I think we actually have got a lot of that solved just this week, in that we are putting more cameras down there. We had great coverage already, but we want to make sure that we're not missing anything. No little blind spots or anything like that. So,
talking to Captain Janice Daly about the Red River District downtown, with the cameras that are linked to the real-time crime center, I believe it was Councilman Alan Jackson, I apologize if I'm wrong about which councilman, said, couldn't we on like Fridays and Saturday nights have somebody at the real-time crime center kind of be designated, hey, periodically look at the cameras in the Red River District. And if you see that crowd starting to grow, we need to alert police and say, hey, we might want to send some more people down there. Is that going to be part of this equation?
There is nothing that is off the table for this. I mean, if that is something that we can do and make happen and it helps make things safer and people feel safer, then it's absolutely a possibility. Mm-hmm. And we'll do what we can.
The incident that happened the other night, I misspoke, said it was a shooting. It was not a shooting. Thank you, Chris. It was a fight. And that was just individuals that knew each other. It wasn't something that was random.
Correct.
What had happened there?
And I'm not real familiar with the incident, so I can only speak in generalities, and I do believe it's still being investigated, but it's very much what you just described. People who knew each other, they had a disagreement about something, it turned into a physical altercation.
Can you stay with us? Because I got some other questions about other possibilities, things we could do down there.
Sure.
All right, we're going to have to tie her to the chair. All right.
Maybe we'll heat up her coffee for her. Captain Janice Daly in studio, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. Way to go, Ruben. Halloween.
You know what I told Ruben today? I said, you play all the Halloween music you want, except...
Right?
Thriller?
No Thriller.
And Monster Mash.
Thank you.
Because everybody else in the world, I've already heard Thriller 8 times this morning. So, yeah, Ruben's finding the good stuff.
Captain Janice Daly, Shreveport Police Department in studio with Mike and McCarty talking about the report you're about to present to City Council.
The mayor.
Mm-hmm. And the mayor. Mm-hmm. For the Shreveport Police plans to try to increase security and safety in the Red River District.
Captain, let me ask you, because there's been a lot of discussion about permits and who needs to go to the city and get a permit for an event. What is the advice if I'm going to have 30 people, if I'm going to have 100 people? What's the city's typical rules on that?
If you're having a special event in the district, you are supposed to get a permit. You go through SPAR to do it. It's a very simple process. They have the forms out on the website. Submit it 30, 45 days in advance. Gives every entity who's going to be involved in that, fire department, SPAR, police department, gives us an opportunity to review it.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure everything's in place that needs to be in place, and then you have a safe and happy event.
And y'all would have police presence there?
If required, yeah. And that is sometimes dependent upon the number of people,
okay,
is whether or not you're required to have security.
But isn't it what's happening in the Red River District now, these kind of spontaneous social media posts or people texting each other saying, hey, let's get together in the Red River District, and then that grows and grows and grows, like when we were teenagers and mom and dad were gone, and all of a sudden we've got 100 kids at our house.
It is my understanding that that is what is occurring. I haven't been down there when that has occurred, but that's my appreciation of it. Somebody makes a post, and mm-hmm. then next thing you know, everybody's down there mm-hmm. having a good time.
I heard Fatty Arbuckles is leaving the Red mm-hmm. River District before too long. It's got to be pretty empty. With your report and with your plans, we know there's been discussion about Curtis Jackson possibly getting involved in the Red River District. Has that been a factor at all? Have y'all heard from him? Has the mayor talked to he or his people at all?
I can't speak for the mayor. I can tell you that Mr. Jackson is allowing us to use like the camera trailer that he and his people bought mm-hmm. last year. We're going to use that to enhance the security. And it's my understanding from speaking with Chief Smith that he is very on board with helping us make the area safer for everybody to enjoy.
Everything that I've heard, I really appreciate his attitude toward what he has planned or what he would like to do. He said, stop calling it Ratchet City. Let's mm-hmm. make this something that we can all be proud of, and putting his own money in to do it.
Yes. And we have to really distinguish. The Red River District is owned by the city of Shreveport.
Correct.
We own that.
Right.
If we reach a management agreement with 50 Cent to run that, how does that change what you guys would have to do? He would then have to hire you or find security himself if he's hired to run the property, but we would still own it, but he's got the lease for it. How would that work?
Had not thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that we would have to look at, and would we keep the same requirements in place that we have now? And like you said, if we keep the same requirements in place, then it's just everything goes through him mm-hmm. instead of, you know, my guys in special events setting up and contacting and saying, hey, Chris, do you want to work? Well, then Mr. Jackson would contact us, and then we would hire the officers.
Let's talk staffing a minute, because if you've got a crowd that's growing into 200, 300 people, and you realize that on a Friday night, you don't have a bunch of police officers sitting around looking for something to do,
no, ma'am,
typically on a Friday night. How do you say, hey, I need to pull, you know, A, B, and C from these districts because the Red River District is starting to. How do you make decisions like that?
That's one of those reasons why we ask people to let us know in advance if you're going to have an event, because then we can be down there, and it may not take, you know, 97 of us. It only takes 5 of us. We can be down there. We can monitor. We can be proactive and address things before they get out of hand. Obviously, if something gets out of hand, then wherever we need to utilize personnel from, we will use them for that short period of time. Even if it's asking, you know, the sheriff's department to come in and help us, we can put out the call for help to the state police, all of that. I mean, we're going to make sure that first and foremost that the public stays safe and that our officers stay safe, or do our best to do that. Mm-hmm. We can't guarantee it.
Does your plan, I know we're talking about the Red River District, but does it include the entire entertainment district, which goes, I believe, up Texas?
Right now,
over?
Right now, we are just looking at the Red River District.
Okay.
There was some mention, too, at the council meeting about when we talk about the permits, about, you know, police officers who do show up at those events, and let's say they're using the stage. And I was astonished to hear the SPAR guy say sometimes they hack into the box down there to turn on the power, because y'all don't turn on the power. The city doesn't turn on the power to the stage unless there is a permit pulled. And for some of these events where there hasn't been a permit pulled, they've hacked into the box or they've run extension cords. Could your officers go up to the stage to whoever's running the show up there and say, show me your permit? And if you don't, then you shut this off. We turn off the speakers. The crowd has to go home. Is that something you're prepared to do, or is it something in your plan? Hey, we might want to start doing that.
We can ask to see permits. We can be shown those. And as far as, you know, going in and killing power and shutting things off, nothing is off the table. Everything has to be weighed. Benefits versus risk.
Obviously
versus
not the first thing you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, you want to try to gain compliance. I mean, that's always our goal, is gain compliance. Let's get this to where nothing is out of control. You continue to have a good time, but no one's being hurt, things like that. And again, it's a risk-benefit analysis that we would have to do before we would do something that, you know, crazy, okay. drastic.
How many businesses are left down there right now, with especially with Fatty's leaving?
Four, I believe it is.
Are there really?
The other concern is, because I've seen some pictures of some of the reunion events that were held down there that apparently did not have permits, where it got to over 1,000 people, and it was a big crowd. The fire department has to have, there are some rules about how many people can be down there. Are they in this mix in, hey, here's the numbers that are allowable down there? Are they part of this plan that you're going to be presenting?
Sure. Like I said a minute ago, anything that occurs down there that we permit, we consult with them. And if things move forward as we think, then we will reach out to the fire department, fire prevention, and the state fire marshal if we need to see if there is a maximum occupancy load that can be handled in that. It's a little different than, say, the building, because it's open.
Right.
It's open air. So those add things, you know, different things that we have to take into consideration.
Are y'all working with casino management at all? Or are they involved in any of the Red River District anymore?
I'm not sure if they're still involved with the Red River District. I don't know the answer to that question. I can tell you right now, we are in the very preliminary stages of planning all this, and I have not talked to any of casino management.
Captain Janice Daly, the other question, I have a bunch, but we're running out of time. Underage drinking down there. When y'all get called down there, what are some of the things you first will address with the crowd? Will you find out if there's illegal guns, if there's illegal drinking? What are some of the concerns that you have when you first arrive, when officers arrive on the scene?
I think it's going to be based on the type of complaint we receive. Obviously, if it's just because there's a crowd, then you address the most serious safety violations first.
Mm-hmm.
If you have been called because there is a fight, then you have to address that first, and then again, you have to prioritize, you know, you have to triage things.
Right. You're not just going to go down there and see if there are underage people drinking. I mean, you don't have the manpower to do that.
Not only, correct. We'll leave it at correct. And it's, again, it's a risk-benefit analysis.
Right.
You know, is it worth it for me to go down there and create hostile environment because you're 20, mm-hmm. and you are drinking? You're not causing a problem.
Right.
You're not causing a problem.
Sure.
It is against the law, but, you know, I've got a group of 37-year-olds on the other side who's creating a problem.
They're stirring things up.
Yeah, maybe I should address them instead of you.
Okay. So.
It's the kind of the BS to dollars ratio,
yes.
that you have to examine.
I completely understand.
Sure.
I know you took the chief on a tour down there the other day and to kind of show him what the situation looks like, and y'all are putting the plan together, and hopefully we'll be presented to the mayor and get some things moving pretty quickly, right?
Hope so.
Gotcha.
Captain Janice Daly, Shreveport Police Department, thank you for coming out.
Thank you all for having me. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL. Coming up, Alan Sebald, is state senator, going to be joining us, talking about his plans to run for Caddo DA. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEEL.
Oh my gosh.
A quick little Halloween thing I want to share with you because it's kind of interesting from my family. I have five brothers, as you well know. Only one younger than me, so the rest are older. And we would typically trick-or-treat together, and this is in the day when everybody knows everybody in the neighborhood. I mean, sure. The whole block. Oh, yeah. Everybody knew the McCarty kids. We traveled in a pack of six, and there's no mom or dad with us. You know, you could run the neighborhood without mom or dad. Mom and dad would love. They'd stay home and pass out candy, and they'd have their cocktails or whatever. And so we would go fill those orange little buckets.
It was a different time.
It was a different time. And they didn't even worry about us. Not a thing. We could come back at 9 at night. They didn't care.
What are you doing home?
Yeah, exactly. We still have some wine to drink. We'd go up and down the streets all through my neighborhood, Sherwood Forest, if you're familiar with Baton Rouge. And we'd go up and down. We'd come back. And then we'd all sit in the living room in a big circle. And mom and dad would be on the sofa kind of watching. And we'd all dump out our pumpkins and see what we got. Let's see the treats. Let's see what we got. And then we'd start trading. We'd start bargaining. And the low candy on the totem pole in my family was those candies that are wrapped in the orange and black. No value.
Kind of peanut butter. Loved them. No value.
Like
toffee. Awesome.
Nobody wanted them. We wanted the chocolates. We wanted the payday bars.
Sure.
We wanted the Hershey bars. The Snickers were big sellers. Let's see. Kit Kat bars. Those were big. I had one brother who liked Tootsie Rolls.
Yeah.
And so we could bargain with him. And we literally would bargain like we were at a marketplace. I'll give you three Tootsie Rolls for one Snickers. And it would go on for an hour before we ever ate a piece of candy. I have such memories of that. And then one brother would try to, you know, he was one of those, he was a sleazy.
He was stealing money out of the Monopoly bank when you played, right?
Yes, exactly. So he would try to shortchange the youngest.
Right.
You know, he would try, I'm going to give you one Tootsie Roll for that Hershey bar. And my little brother sometimes would fall for it. And I would be looking at him like, you just got robbed. He just robbed you. The memories are just so fun. Just so fun.
Yes.
I can see all the little faces are in that circle trading our candy and having the best time. And just, my oldest brother's 10 years older than me. So he would always be in charge, you know, make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. And he would drag, and he didn't want to be trick-or-treating probably when he was 12 or 13 or 14. But he would go with us just because mom and dad said, go with the kids. Take them all trick-or-treating. But, yeah, everybody knew when we were coming. Here comes those McCarty kids.
I had a Frankenstein mask. And this is based on it was one of those rubber nice at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the Boris Karloff actual Universal Monsters Frankenstein. It was awesome.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, great. Again, great memories.
Yes.
I grew up in Southern Gardens.
Okay.
In South Bossier. And that was the southernmost neighborhood at the time.
Oh, nice.
I'm talking mid to late 60s.
Good place for trick-or-treating?
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Nice middle-class neighborhood. It was small enough you could make the whole neighborhood.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. It was the only time, by the way, and somebody texted me, it was the only time you would ever catch me in a dress. Because maybe I would dress up as Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz or a witch, and I would have a dress on and all that. Because my father used to always say to my mom, she's never going to wear blue jeans. Shoot, I came out of the womb in blue jeans.
Which is uncomfortable for your mom. But
Halloween, yeah. Halloween, I'd put on some sort of cute little girly costume and go out and be a princess or whatever for a day, and it was fun.
State Senator Alan Sebald will be joining us in studio talking about his future plans. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710KEEL.com. You know, when they screened that movie, Carpenter, wasn't that the director?
This is from Halloween, yeah.
The movie Halloween mm-hmm. from, I think, what, late 70s.
I think you're right.
And people were like, meh. And they didn't have this soundtrack. And Carpenter went in and composed that.
Oh.
Simple piano. Dun, 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 dun.
Yes.
Changed the movie entirely. Mm-hmm. Turned it into a legend.
Yes, absolutely.
Golly. I was talking with Tim Fletcher earlier this morning. He comes in. We do his sports for us to play in the mornings. And we were talking about Governor Landry getting involved in LSU athletics. Mm. I like a lot of things that Governor Landry is doing and has done. There's some things I don't like. I don't think the governor needs to be involved in a college university's athletic program. I understand it's a state school. We've got other things that we need to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And Fletch made a good point. He goes, think about it. Right now, LSU has no president. We have no athletic director.
Mm-hmm.
We have no head coach. And there was one other position. What head football coach in the top tier is going to want to come to LSU?
Yeah.
Especially with the governor being involved.
I think put yourself in Lane Kiffin's shoes. And you see the governor go on Pat McAfee's show talking about the next coach of LSU. He did tell Pat he's not picking the coach. I'm not picking the coach.
Well, but
you sure have immersed yourself into the debate and into the argument and saying the athletic director won't be choosing. And I understand that. I mean, Woodward made a couple of bad deals, really bad deals.
Now, Fletch did say at Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher, yes, Woodward hired Jimbo Fisher, but it was the next AD after him that extended Jimbo Fisher's contract and tied them into that massive deal. Mm. So that technically wasn't Woodward.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
So I'll go, okay, I'll give him that.
Right. The governor was asked about the $54 million Brian Kelly buyout and how, you know, private donors were stepping up. But the governor made a very valid point. He says, well, what if we didn't have private donors step up? Then it would be that $54 million would be on the taxpayers.
Right.
And that's something we do want the governor to be concerned about. So it's like,
but that's different.
Yes.
Now, didn't he also say the taxpayers will foot the bill?
It's not happening. Apparently, what I'm hearing is that it was negotiated down to $27 million and that private donors are paying it.
So if you're Brian Kelly, why would you negotiate down? If LSU owes him $54 million, no, sir. You fired me. This was my contract. You pay me my $54
million.
Negotiate it down?
The piece I saw on, I believe, WAFB in Baton Rouge.
I'm not saying it didn't happen. Asking what's the incentive for him?
I'm going to explain. Was that they had him on some sort of morals clause violation. And if you want us to be quiet about this and not bring this out, then we're going to negotiate this number down.
Because, you know, he got a divorce during his tenure here at LSU.
And was there something going on
right
that they know about and he doesn't want out? For me to lose
$30
million,
right.
It had to be something pretty whopper doodle for me to sign off on losing $30 million. So who knows what it is? I don't know. And if we've negotiated it down to $27 million, we will probably never know what it was.
Sure.
Unless the ex-wife comes out and says, hey, here's what he did or did not do.
And he's not there anymore. I don't care.
No.
I don't care.
No.
I don't.
I'm just, it really bothers me because what do we have? Three more games left of the season? Four more games? It's just, the season's toast. And
right.
As an LSU fan, I hate to sit here and say the season is toast.
But we're done.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's frustrating because we've got Alabama waiting in the wings for us a week from tomorrow.
Who is, by the way, surging.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't hold out any hope either.
Oh.
State Senator Alan Seabaugh joining us after the top of the hour. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
What? want to do the little stories of the day.
Yeah, the big
voice. Okay, Ruben, I know you're busy over there, but it's Halloween. Mm-hmm. And we even, I had a request. And I know you said no Monster Mash, so technically this is not Monster Mash.
Okay.
But we did have a request for, what's it called? It's not...
Oh, it's
Coffin.
It's the Coffin Nap song.
Yes.
Yes.
Somebody asked me that.
Yes. I got a text earlier, and Joy said she wants to hear the your version.
You have it, Ruben?
I need to find it. Well, we have it on YouTube, but right now my computer won't play through the board.
Okay. Well, I have to pull it up on yours.
Oh, I have to pull it up on yours.
Oh, okay.
It's on the Keel YouTube if you want to search it out and listen to it on your own time. But yeah, it's a song I wrote. Oh God, what was even going on?
It was Greg Tarver. I didn't understand how he was voting in the mayor's race,
right?
When he didn't live in the city limits,
right? Yes.
And he said, "Well, he sometimes sleeps in a coffin at his funeral home, is in the city."
He counted that as his residence,
right?
Him and Barbara Norton were going at it back in the day. How long ago was this?
God, it's been a long, long time.
It was around when I first started doing the show.
Yes.
I remember that, and then. All this came out. I was sitting here. I was recording the interview, and when he said he sleeps in a casket, I lost it.
I know.
Like, man, what have I signed up for?
Yes, exactly. And then you went and, under the influence of I don't know what, you created a song.
A little of this, a little of that, and yeah, I wrote a song overnight. Mike, have you found it?
No.
Have you
found it? Some of these videos, my gosh, are 20 years old.
Before 9 o'clock, right before 9 o'clock, we will play it.
Yeah, we'll find it.
We'll find it, and we will get it and on the air right before 9 o'clock. If you haven't heard it, what did you call it, Ruben?
I think Coffin Nap.
Coffin Nap, yes.
I think is what I called it.
Because he said... That's my residence. I sleep there. I sleep in a coffin.
And tried to get me to come sleep in a coffin. That's never going to happen, Senator Tarver. It's never going to happen. But I was somewhere. Text me if you were with me when someone asked for that. They actually requested that of me, too.
They said,
y'all usually play that at Halloween, and I forgot to say something to you. But, yeah, man, it's hilarious. And okay, Ruben did a great job.
Billion videos of you and Robert and Aaron, but there's nothing. I don't see anything.
I'll search for Coffin Nap. We'll find it. We'll find it. We'll have it right before 9. If you haven't heard the Coffin Nap song, we talk about awesome. Barbara Norton's wigs. And, it's a fun little ditty that Ruben did.
Well, we don't even have time to get to it now. Anyway.
If you want to message us, by the way, if you have questions for Alan Seaball, who's running for district attorney as a conservative Republican against James Stewart, if you have questions for Alan, get him in on the message board now so that we can ask him. He's coming in studio, and we will ask him, what's he going to do about making sure we're prosecuting these criminals and not letting them out of jail?
Mikey McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on that free Keel app. FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty in studio, Senator Alan Seaball joining us. First of all, before we get to your big news, you've got a big weekend. Your five-year high school reunion.
Five-year high school reunion. Yeah, I'm a proud graduate of the Captain Shreve class of 1985, and we're having our 40th high school reunion this week.
Wow.
And we got it started off last night. A bunch of us went to the Shreve Halton game, and... Yeah, we got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday events.
Did you go under the bleachers and pop some beers like you?
No comment.
Enough about that. I'm a bird mom. Hush up about you.
We had a very good class, and I'm very proud of a lot of the people that we graduated.
Y'all have fun.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a good time.
Mike Johnson wasn't in your class.
Mike is a baby. Mike is 5 years younger than me. We went to the same high school, but he's 5 years younger.
Right.
You are running for district attorney of Caddo Parish.
I am that, yes.
What on earth made you decide to do that?
Well, it's a lot of things that are happening in our community are simply not acceptable. I have people that tell me they hear gunshots at least weekly, if not daily. we have a revolving door of violent crimes committed by people that should still be in prison from previous offenses. It's one thing after another, but it's anecdotal and it's constant of people that saying, you know, somebody broke in my car and the police wouldn't even come investigate because they're so short. I think I was somewhere around 150 officers short. And so I started talking to officers and they blame the DA's office. Different reasons, but everything seems to funnel back to what is happening and not happening in the DA's office. And if we're going to fix Caddo Parish, if we're going to fix Shreveport, if we're going to stop being at the top of these crime statistics, something is going to have to drastically change in the district attorney.
They're saying the crime statistics are down. The crime numbers are down. Do you think they're lying?
I do. And I don't think they're lying. I think they're wrong. I think arrests might be down because we have fewer police officers who are not arresting people. But when somebody broke in your car and stole something out of your car, that used to be reported as a crime. Now they're saying, call your insurance company. Those things aren't getting reported as crimes. And anecdotally, I had somebody say, somebody broke in my car, stole some stuff, stole my phone, I think it was. And we tracked the phone, and I actually called the police, said, it's at this address. And they said, we just don't have the manpower. We don't care.
But murders are down.
Maybe. I mean, that's fine. I'm sure they are. But I mean, I can't quote... Yeah, I mean, I'm not disputing that. I haven't looked specifically at the statistics, but we're still higher than Chicago. So when we have, I mean, that was a question.
Per capita.
It was right. A question in a Senate Judiciary Committee meeting last week when they were confirming the federal judge that's going to be in the Western District in Shreveport. The senator that was asking him the questions, isn't the murder rate in Shreveport higher than in Chicago? And the answer was an unequivocal yes. Again, I haven't compared
the
numbers.
That's disturbing.
It's disturbing. And the very fact that we're having the conversation, when Gavin Newsom can come out and say crime in Shreveport is worse, because he's taking a dig at Mike Johnson, but crime in Shreveport is worse than San Francisco. And, you know, we tend to cast dispersions on some of those big cities. The very fact that we're having those conversations and having to look at the numbers tells you we have a problem. And the fact is, I don't care if it's down. It's not down enough.
Mm-hmm. The gunshots people are hearing at night are real.
They're real, absolutely yeah. real. And the property crimes, and I mean, there was I watched a video this morning of somebody stealing a bunch of stuff from Albertsons in Shreveport, and it's just it's constant and it's out there, and nobody's doing anything about it.
Well, now Caddo DA James Stewart says he is prosecuting, but he can't help what the judges do or the juries do. What would you do different than what's being done right now?
Well, I don't think the problem is the judges or the juries. And they are prosecuting people. I'm not disputing that. I think it's selective prosecution. I think certain people are not being prosecuted who perhaps should be. And I think a lot of what they're doing is to get statistics so they can say, look how good we're doing. But I hear from criminal defense attorneys, from former assistant DAs, from people all over the political spectrum. And I have not had one single person come to me and say, I really think they're doing a bang-up job. They're doing the best they can.
Governor Landry said right on this radio station that James Stewart's doing a good job.
Well,
you heard that.
I did. And he said they're doing, he actually didn't say he's doing a good job. He said they're prosecuting. I forget
right.
exactly what he's. They're getting people to court. They're trying cases. Something to that effect.
Were you kind of shocked to hear that?
I was a little, and I don't think he'll say it again. I don't think it was accurate. I think what he was trying to do was they were pushing legislation to take a shot at the DA in Orleans Parish, and he was trying to show a contrast. Some people are doing better than Orleans Parish. And I will say we're probably doing better than Orleans Parish.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, not doing a good job.
Does the DA's office have enough ADAs?
Yeah, that was actually what the legislation was going to take some warrants away from Orleans and give them to Caddo. Certainly we could use more, but do they have enough to do a better job than they're doing right now? Absolutely.
Your directive to your assistant district attorneys with regard to plea deals, what would District Attorney Alan Seabaugh tell your assistants where that's concerned?
Well, that's a very broad question, and every case is specifically mm-hmm. different. What I think you need to look at is where the person is coming from. Look at their history. Are they a repeat offender? And I think we have to take a very close look at why people are sitting in CCC for 3 years, sometimes longer than that. Some of them on misdemeanors.
Would you say no plea deals for repeat offenders? Violent offenders?
Violent offenders, maybe. I mean, you can't really say no broadly like that because, again, every case is different. Every fact is different. You do have to look at each case individually. But if you look at it in a broad spectrum, when you have people that are arrested for violent offenses that are taking pleas to either misdemeanors or low-grade felonies and getting out for time served because they sat in CCC for 2 years, and they're right back out on the street, or they're taking pleas very quickly. I mean, I've had many police officers say, I have literally had the person released before I finished processing the paperwork. In and out, in and out, in and out, and they're back on the street, and people, I mean, it is very easy to find examples of violent, bad crimes committed in this community by people that should have still been incarcerated from previous offenses, out on probation on 3 or 4 offenses. And the bottom line is we have to do better. And I'm running because I am firmly convinced that I can do better than what we have right now. I'm not saying everything they do is wrong, and I'm not saying that they're doing anything intentional. I think they're probably doing their best. But the fact of the matter is you can look at the crime in this community and say their best is not good enough. What we're doing right now is not good enough. What's happening in this community right now is not acceptable. I don't accept a lot of the things that I'm hearing, and I'm running because I'm convinced we can do better.
Okay.
State Senator Alan Sebaugh in studio. Can you hold with us?
I can.
Mm-hmm. And we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. Senator Alan Sebaugh in studio. Mike and McCarty, you recently announced that you are running for Caddo DA.
Yes, I am.
I know you've got a lot of support.
I do.
We've talked to James Stewart several times, as a matter of fact. He has been willing to come in studio with us. One of the things that I've always wondered about, if you will, are the particular pleas. Like, if there are several charges, it seems to me that the more serious gun charges would be pled down, and then others would be prosecuted. And his response was, we have to prosecute what we feel we can have the evidence to get a conviction on, and saying the police might not have done X, Y, or Z to be able to get them the evidence. How would you do things differently in that situation?
Well, again, every case is different. Every case has different facts. But one of the things you have to look at is if you have multiple charges, some have mandatory minimums that are higher than others. It depends on what you decide to let them plead to. And if it returns a violent criminal back to the street, it's probably not a good idea. But sometimes that they're... people are sitting in CCC for longer than the mandatory minimum would be had they pled guilty early on. So they're getting credit for time served and walking as soon as they plead. So I think you have to look at, one, taking the violent criminal off the street. And I think that has to be the primary focus. If a person is a repeat offender, they're probably going to continue to be a repeat offender.
Ruben, if you look at his computer right now, he's working on mugshots. He does mugshots every week and puts them up. I can't tell you the countless times he's gone, oh, here's a frequent flyer. Look at this guy. He was just on last week.
I did pass the bill to make it legal to release them again.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
Thank you for that.
Thank you very much.
Ruben really likes that.
Yeah, that was one that never should have passed.
But these frequent flyers, they're every week.
That's Chief exactly Smith's. Why it's necessary that mugshots need to be made available so people can see it and see who's coming up. But yeah, when you see somebody arrested 18, 20, 30, yes. 30 times, some of those for violent offenses, that's probably one that you need to look at a little closely, and maybe that person needs to go away for a little while.
Alan Sebaugh, let me ask you this, because I got a call while I was on medical leave from someone. You said it's not a judge problem. But I got a call from someone who said, we have one judge, and I don't know that this is accurate, so don't quote me. We have one judge in our courts on Fridays. The rest of, in the criminal side, the rest of them take Fridays off. Should that be happening?
Well, honestly, that's a DA issue because the assistant DA sets the calendar. And that's so.
Would that happen under your watch as a DA?
We will push to get cases to trial. And if they tried 60, we'll try 80. We're going to push everything that we can because, one, I want to clear out CCC. And, two, I want to get violent criminals off the street. And I want to make sure that everybody is pushed through the system to the fullest extent. I mean,
control a judge's schedule?
The DA actually does.
Okay,
yes.
I thought that was the state Supreme Court, but no,
well,
it's not.
No, the DA sets when a case is set for trial, when a case is coming up on the docket. The DA actually sets that.
But can't the judge tell the DA, don't schedule me anything on Fridays?
But I don't think that's what they're doing.
Okay.
I don't think they're voluntarily doing that.
You think the judge is setting nothing on Fridays?
No, I think the DA is not setting things on Friday. Yes, I do.
Interesting.
I mean, the fact of the matter is we have a problem in this community, and it's not exclusively anybody's fault. And I've heard people blame it on the public defenders. They blame it on the judges. They blame it on the DA. They blame it on, you know, across. It's a team issue, and it's not any one particular problem. But there's one particular problem, one aspect of that I can fix, and that's the DA aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Because just about everybody involved points to the DA's office and say, that is the biggest part of the problem. Is the public defender's office perfect? No. One of the things that I have done as a legislator is fight for funding for the public defender system. They are woefully underfunded. We need to fund the public defender's office considerably better than we are doing right now. And people look at me, oh, you're a law and order legislator. I am. But mm-hmm. public defender is a big part of the law and order system, and we need to fund that. We need to do a better job across the board.
There's some that would say you've been a state lawmaker for a long time. Part of our problem is a backup of state inmates in our jail. Get those dang state inmates out of here, and so we have more room in our local jail. What's the state doing about that?
Well, what the state did when John Bel Edwards was governor is we closed prisons and let everybody out. So now a lot of those let people out of jail laws, which passed while John Bel was governor, have been rescinded or revised under Jeff Landry, and those prisons are still closed. So it's coming. I mean, they used to say we had too many people in jail. I think that's the wrong statement. We have too many people committing crime. If you have more people committing crime, you need to have more people in jail. You mm-hmm. can't look and say there's too many people in jail without assessing why they're in jail. And the fact of the matter is, especially in this community, people aren't afraid to get arrested. They're not afraid of the
right.
police.
That's
they're not
right.
afraid of the justice system. So why not go commit a crime? And the fact of the matter is we need to get their attention, and we need to let them know that no more sweetheart deals. And if you commit crime in Caddo Parish, we're going to make you pay, and we're going to make what the signal that I would like to send is if you intend to commit crime, go do it somewhere else, because Caddo Parish is off limits because if you get caught, which I hope we could work with the police and catch them, because the police are doing their job they're short people, mm-hmm. but they are doing their job. The message needs to be delivered that Caddo Parish is a place you do not want to get arrested. And that's my goal, is to have people out there who are at this point not afraid to get arrested, not afraid to break the law because they're not afraid of the justice system. I would like to get their attention and let them know that we're serious and we're not going to tolerate it anymore.
I know you just made the comment a moment ago, and I think I know what you meant, but I'll let you clarify. You said you want to clear out CCC. You don't mean...
People are sitting there way too long before their cases are being
right. Done.
Yes, and I'm not saying I'm going to let them go.
Right.
I want to prosecute them through the system and get them out of local CCC, get them into the state system, and get them into the... There's a difference in a jail and a prison. And CCC is predominantly holding people before trial.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to get them through the system, get them through that, through the system, and get them into the state system, and frankly, get them out of our community. And, you know, here's another factor that's very important. When you're in the state system, the Department of Corrections has a tremendous amount of resources, education, training, things that is available that are not available at CCC. It's not intended to be
right.
incarceration long term. It's supposed to be holding until trial. No, I was going to say, some of those people need help. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can get them on a different path so that they're not committing more crime. But they're not going to get that at CCC. They're going to get it in the State Department of Corrections system. And there's a lot of programs. The criminal justice reform under Jobbit was called the Justice Reinvestment Act. And one of the things we did was we invested in job training, programming, so that when your sentence is over, you're not just released, mm-hmm. that you have some basis to go get a job, so maybe you don't have to commit crime to support yourself. We've put those programs in place, but they're not at the local level. They're at the state level. So they need to be prosecuted into the state system so that we can actually maybe keep them off the street longer.
Last question real quick, if you don't mind. How does a conservative Republican win in a parish with under 30% Republican voters?
I don't think your numbers are correct, but
okay.
The city may be there. The parish isn't.
Okay.
But if you look at the sheriff's race, it came down to one vote. And, you know, I think the fact of the matter is the votes are there. It's just a matter of getting out. And look, I'm not only appealing to Republican voters. I said this at my announcement. I'm not doing this to make Spring Lake safer. I'm doing it to make Cedar Grove safer. This is not just about South Highlands and Broadmoor. It's about Allendale and MLK.
Those are the people most impacted, is
Every,
the truth.
Yes, yeah. That is absolutely correct. This crime, this issue disproportionately affects the African-American community. And if they think that what we're having right now is fine, they're welcome to go vote for James Stewart. But what I'm getting since I announced is everybody across the political spectrum is absolutely sick of what's happening in this community. And
well, we're hearing gunshots in Broadmoor, too.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
I agree.
Yeah. Alan Seaball, I'm sure you'll be back. If we invite James Stewart in here with you one day,
absolutely.
Feel free to join him.
Yes.
We'll do it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Alan Seaball, thank you. Have a good weekend. Enjoy your Captain Shreve reunion.
Yeah. I plan to.
Go Bird.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Kia.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault joined us from his hospital room earlier this morning. Hear what he's got to say and get an update on his health right after the break. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710Kiel.com. Wasn't ready for that, Ruben. Love it. Do, do, do,
do, do. Scary music.
Now, on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline.
Shreveport Mayor, he may have hung up now, though.
Maybe so, yeah.
Tom Arsenault. Mayor, good morning.
I'm still here.
Good.
Well, how you feeling?
How are we?
I feel great. The wonders of modern chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Tell us how it came on. I heard you coughing at the council meeting, but somebody had told me you had been feeling sick a little bit prior to that. How did this all come on?
Oh, I've been coughing for, I would say a couple of weeks. And this is the time of year that I normally will get some sinus drippage. And so I really mm-hmm. just attributed it to that. But it did kept getting worse. And then last weekend, I had a real bout of chills and fever, and as well as the cough. And it seemed to get better. I took a flu shot, and I thought perhaps it was a reaction to that. So I have a lot of different things that in my non-medical, rational mind made sense. But starting Monday afternoon and then Tuesday morning, I really was coughing badly and feeling badly, but there were a couple of things on the agenda that I wanted to see through, and so I really wanted to make it through the council meeting Tuesday. So I did go to the doctor early Tuesday morning, but my symptoms were not all that bad at that time, and starting about noon, they really, really accelerated.
Okay.
And I wasn't feeling well at all, but I hung around through the kindness of the city council. They moved those items up on the agenda so that I could excused myself, and the fireman said, we really ought to check you out while we're here. So they did, and they were recommending that I go to the hospital. So
that was my next question, because when you stepped out of the council chambers, there were already firemen out in the lobby. Is that right?
They were, yes. They really watched me carefully, and they take good care of me. Of course, we had the chief and one of the assistant chiefs, and they called in the deputy chief, and then they brought in the other folks. They just wanted to make sure that there wasn't something more serious going on. Of course, as it turns out, there was.
Mm-hmm. So, now, somebody had told me, and obviously now I'm learning it was wrong, that you, quote, fell out. There was no fall. No, there was no collapse or anything like that, correct?
No. I walked out when I just was weak. And when I stood up, I realized how weak I was. My vital signs were not good. I had a little temperature, and my blood pressure was elevated. My white cell count was elevated. And so they said, we think there's something else going on, and we think we ought to transport you to the hospital. And I was resistant to that because I'm very stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
And they got on the line with my primary care physician, and she said, you need to take him to the hospital.
Yeah.
So you get in the ambulance and they take you.
I said, this sounds like I ought to be taken to the hospital. So that's what they did. When I got to the hospital, I was running a very high temperature, very high white cell count. And then they did some extra. I had x-rays done Tuesday morning, so I knew I had pneumonia. But at that point, we didn't feel like I needed to go home right away. And I'm really glad that I didn't do that, because I wouldn't be here getting the care that I am getting.
Troop Mayor Tom Arsenault. Tom, I just went completely blank.
They tested you for COVID. It was not COVID, correct?
No COVID, no flu, no sinusitis. It's a bacterial infection that anybody can get. And obviously, if you start coughing up mucus and it lasts for more than a day or two, you should go get checked out. And I did not do that, and I'm paying a price for it.
Well, and now what I wanted to emphasize, you're not under sedation and you are not out of control. You are still not in, you're not incapacitated. You're still acting as mayor.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've signed a bunch of contracts yesterday. I really reached the stage where I feel great, and I'm not really short of breath. My oxygen level has returned to 100%. I have no fever, but basically they're so pleased with the way I'm responding to the antibiotics that they don't want to stop that pattern. And those I can only get here at the hospital, so they're going to keep me for a few more days just to make sure we kill all those little bacteria that are sitting at the bottom of my lungs dead.
Yeah, because kickback comes back twice as hard.
Everybody you were around on Tuesday, is this bacterial pneumonia contagious?
No.
Okay. So nobody, you didn't spread it?
I didn't spread it, no.
Are you on oxygen? Are they periodically giving you oxygen still or no?
No, not anymore. And my oxygen level, I'm looking at my chart, my little electronic chart. My oxygen level right now is, not showing, but earlier this morning it was 100%, which most of us don't get. And they took me off of additional oxygen Tuesday night.
Okay. Are you getting
up? I haven't had any extra oxygen. I'm taking breathing treatments and the normal things they do for pneumonia.
Are you planning to be back at the office on Tuesday? Is that what I saw in the news release?
That's the plan, yeah, because the regimen of the IV antibiotics will end on Monday. It's a seven-day regimen, so it'll end on Monday. And one of the other advantages of this is by the time that I get back to the office, I should be able to be on a full schedule.
Oh, wow. Okay. Do you need anything? Are there things that people, I mean, you want me to drop by and tell you jokes or something?
No, actually, I have a really good political novel that I'm reading.
Oh, good.
And I've got
Southern-made donuts?
Actually, the food here is good, so I'm doing very well. Lots of people have called and emailed and texted and left encouraging words and let me know they were praying for me, and that's all very important. It really helps my recovery and helps my spirits.
Erin said her favorite part when she was out was the breakfast.
Breakfast is good there, yeah.
Yes, breakfast is good.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have the grits?
Dinner is particularly good.
Oh, nice.
Well, that's debatable. But
yeah, well, you know, thanks. Elizabeth was coming and going yesterday, and she kind of popped in during the lunch hour. Had a hard time finding a parking place because of the cafeteria.
Oh.
Apparently, it's a popular place to have lunch.
Yeah, that's not bad. Well, it came on fast for you, I know, and it sets you back when medical stuff happens, but it sounds like you're doing great.
I am doing super, and the longer I talk, the more my voice cracks a little bit, but I am just doing very well in my recovery. The staff here is fabulous, and, you know, I've had a few visitors, but really trying to limit that so I will rest.
Gotcha.
Absolutely. Shreveport Mayor Tom Arsenault, look, take care, get better, enjoy the weekend. I don't mean enjoy, but enjoy your time and recover.
A lot of good football on Saturday.
There you go.
You bet.
LSU is not going to lose Saturday.
Yeah, we're not.
That's exactly right.
Thank you, Mayor. Take care.
Thank y'all.
Mm-hmm. 101.7 FM, 710.
Just FYI, if you're waiting to hear Thriller or Monster Mash, that's prohibited.
It won't be anytime before 9.
Won't be here.
But we did get a request. By the way, before I forget... Time change.
You bet.
This weekend.
Extra hour of sleep. Woohoo!
Time change this weekend.
I love that. I love it. I'd rather keep daylight saving time if I had my preference. Sure. I'd leave it alone.
I know, because it's going to get dark at 4:30 now.
I know. I don't like that at all.
It is easier to go to bed earlier.
Yes. Definitely. Yes. But I like daylight later in the day. Oh, I really do.
Of course.
I really do. So it's kind of a bum. I wish we would ultimately just stay on daylight saving time and leave it alone.
And thank you for saying daylight saving time.
I know.
Not daylight savings time.
Yes. There's no S on savings.
Thank you.
FYI. But I did, while I was away, I actually got a request myself. You got a request.
Yes.
For the Senator Tarver coffin nap song. And y'all, are y'all going to play that on Halloween?
The Tarver mash is what I ended up calling
yes.
it.
Yes.
I couldn't remember earlier. But I think this was my first week in this room.
Was it really?
I feel like it was. It was definitely
within
the first month.
That's back when he was putting in effort in the show.
We made him write a song. And how the story came about was, it was during a mayoral election, and Senator Tarver was talking about who he was going to vote for. And I said, you don't even live in the city limits. How are you voting in the city government elections? And that's when he proceeded to say, well, sometime I have a funeral home on Pier Avenue, and sometimes I sleep there. So I use that for my address for his voting record, and I guess it was legal. I don't know. And so I said, you don't sleep in a coffin. He said, yeah, I climb in a coffin. He said, they're comfortable. You should come try it. The man literally climbs in a coffin and takes a nap.
Well, he said.
That's what he said. Oh,
Ruben took that.
Yeah.
I thought that was a ridiculous enough premise to write a song. And you'll hear a lot of laughing and cackling in the background.
Yeah.
But this is the gist of it.
Greg Tarver was working at the funeral home in District 39. When the weight of the day grew heavy on his spine, he crept down the room and opened the lid. And into the casket feet first he slid. He took a nap. He took a coffin nap, a coffin nap. The lid closed with a snap, took a nap. I hope he doesn't get trapped. He took a nap. He took a cough and nap out of the clothes box. The snores did ring, not a care in the world except for just one thing. Tarver opened his eyes and threw open the lid and said, "Whatever happened to Barbara Norton's wigs?" He took a nap. He took a cough and nap. A cough and nap. A cough and nap. I hope he doesn't get trapped. He took a cough and nap. Wow.
That's too good. Good job, Rube.
Yeah, thank you.
I wonder if he still sleeps in a coffin.
I don't know.
I couldn't do it. Could you do that?
We
I couldn't
talk
it.
To him. We need to just call him and check on him.
Check on him, yeah, and
we
chat with him.
We talked to him pretty regularly a year or two ago when he was especially running for mayor.
He takes my call all the time. Yes. He's one of the few that does all the time.
And, hope he's doing well.
I hope he is doing well. And is his political career over, you think?
Yes.
You think he doesn't run for Senate again at some point?
I don't think so. No, why would he?
Well, if Sam Jenkins runs for mayor and wins, that seat comes open. Does he go back and try to win that seat back? I don't know.
Because would he?
Would at he this win point, it? I don't know. It's a good question.
At this point.
That's a good question. And it maybe it's time for the new generation. It's time to stay home. Right. He's in his 70s plus, right? Time to retire and stay home and go fishing. But that was just so funny. I don't know that I really believe it, but he said he sleeps in the coffin.
Yeah.
But whatever. So I don't know. Again, kept inviting me. You need to come. No, it's not happening. As claustrophobic as I am, that ain't happening.
Happy Halloween.
You bet.
Be safe tonight, and we'll be back on Monday.
Go Tigers this weekend.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Key.